everybody. Welcome to the Guys Learning Japanese podcast. How's it going, Nick?
It's going good. How are you?
Not too bad. So for today's topic, I would like to talk about Japanese origins. One question that I get asked pretty often here in Japan is, why did you decide to come to Japan, or why did you decide to start learning Japanese? Have you ever been asked this question, Nick?
Yeah, I get asked that second question a fair bit. As for the first question, I don't think I've ever been asked it. I don't remember it if I have.
Okay. So, what was your first exposure to Japan or any kind of Japanese material?
I used to go to my nana's house on the weekends, and while my mum and nana and my pa were just talking about whatever adult stuff, me and my brother would watch Astro Boy that nana had taped. I'm guessing it was on maybe really early in the morning when my nana was awake, and she would tape it. And, we would sit down and watch maybe 3 or 4 episodes back to back. And so for that 2 hours or hour and a half or whatever, it was really good to watch that show. Did you ever watch Astro Boy?
Yeah, I was actually really into it. I think it was in the late 80s, probably before I was in elementary school. Yeah, I used to get up really early in the morning, like at 5:30 or 6 or something, just to watch it, because that was the only time it was on. And I think at the time, maybe we didn't have a VCR or something, or maybe I had no idea how to use it, or I had no concept that we could record shows on the TV or program the VCR to record on the TV. So I used to wake up really early just to watch it. And I remember really liking it. I thought it was a good show. It was really different from the other cartoons that I was watching.
Yeah, I always remember thinking that the characters' eyes were really strange.
Mm-hmm.
And that they had these giant pupils. Like, their eyes were basically just white and black, and they had these giant pupils. And I just remember thinking that was really strange. Also, their eyes were really long. Mm-hmm. They're really long. And like you said, though, the animation for me also was really strange. And growing up, I used to watch a lot of cartoons, and I was always watching Disney cartoons, and I was always watching Warner Brothers cartoons as well, and to a lesser extent, Hanna-Barbera cartoons. And Astro Boy just seemed to be different to all of them. Also, the main character's voice was kind of like high-pitched and kind of shrill, as in Astro Boy's voice himself.
Yeah.
And I remember that being sort of strange too. Maybe because all of the other shows, like the ones you mentioned, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is about teenagers, and it's maybe voiced by an adult. And so the voice is deeper. And just like many of the other shows, they don't really have maybe kid voice actors. I'm not really sure if Astro Boy, it was a kid or not, but certainly it sounded like a kid, you know?
I can't remember the voice at all now.
Yeah. Yeah. So what about when you went into primary school? What did you were you watching any Japanese shows or doing anything else Japanese related during that time?
After Astro Boy, the next thing for me was probably Jungle Book. This was the Japanese version. It was an animated series, not the Disney version. And I remember this show being really different too, because it dealt with a lot of mature themes, something that you didn't really see too much in Western cartoons. This show, it kind of dealt with the interaction of humans and nature, or the relationship between humans and nature, and kind of the balance of nature. And it's just, it seemed like it was a very mature show that was being marketed towards kids at that time, I guess it was kind of strange for me, but now that I'm more aware, or I'm more, I have more experience in Japanese cartoons, just this seems to be a very common thing in Japanese cartoons. They often deal with very mature themes or very mature topics, even though the show is marketed towards kids.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the next show that I watched in primary school was Dragon Ball Z. I remember I got really, really into Dragon Ball Z. Maybe it would have been around about grade 4 or grade 5 in the morning. There was a TV show called Cheese TV, and it had these two hosts, and they used to just introduce different cartoons, and I never really liked the hosts very much, but the shows were often really good. And very similar to Astro Boy, Dragon Ball Z just seemed to be different for some reason. It had these action scenes which would just go on and on and on for 45 episodes.
All that charging.
Yeah, exactly. Like you said, the characters would be charging up, but then they'd blow up planets and stuff in the process, and it would do that thing which I now know is fairly typical of Japanese TV shows and Japanese anime and everything, which is they would have these long backstory episodes where the character would be charging, and then it would go have conversations in his own head, and then it would go into a flashback, and that flashback would last for most of the episode. And I think that's maybe more common than what it is in more Western shows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I remember the names being strange too. Like the name Goku was just a weird name, and the name Gohan, as I used to pronounce it, was just a weird name. And I think all of the characters, like Piccolo, they just had these sort of strange names which didn't fit in with the vernacular that I was, you know, that I think was more common.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so did you used to do that, play that with your friends, where you would, you know, do these huge fireball attacks and stuff like that with your friends back in school?
I only got into Dragon Ball when I was in high school, so no. It would have been a little weird to be playing games like that, you know, in high school, considering that most people are like trying to like pick up girls or something.
Yeah. I don't think you could pick up any girls if you're too busy Kamehameha-ing them, you know?
Yeah. So what was after Dragon Ball for you?
Well, I was kind of a scrawny kid. I'm still fairly scrawny, but I was a fairly scrawny kid, and I think my mum wanted to toughen me up some, and she wanted me to get more involved in sports and stuff, and she often used to suggest that I start, you know, practicing a martial art or something like that. And so, sure enough, I ended up... sorry. I spent a lot of time growing up near beaches, and yeah, there was a local sort of boat club, like kind of a hall for the normally used for the boat club, and I started going there and doing karate classes with an instructor. Actually, I did it with my next door neighbor, and I also did it with my brother for a while, and the instructor's name was Al, and I subsequently found out that Al was considered sort of really hot by all of the mothers, you know, when they'd come to drop us off or pick us up. They would all sort of swoon over this guy Al, who had this rugged beard, and he was he was really fit and strong. And anyway, so I just remember practicing over and over and over with karate. And so still at that point, it sounds so ridiculous now in hindsight, but I still wasn't really aware of Japan as a place. I still wasn't really aware of the difference between my culture and Japanese culture, and I certainly couldn't point to Japan on a map or something. But yeah, that was, I think, another influence, was back in those early days of practicing karate. How about yourself? What did you sort of transition into next?
I think it was at the same time or around the same time I was watching The Jungle Book in the early 90s. I got really into Street Fighter 2. my parents separated when I was really young, and I spent the weekdays with my mom and the weekends with my dad. And on Friday, my dad would come pick me up at my mom's house after he finished work. And then from there, he would go to the grocery store. And in the grocery store, there was an arcade. And he always gave me like a dollar or two. And basically, I would play video games there for about an hour. And he would get groceries for the week or the weekend. And I spent like every Friday at that arcade playing Street Fighter 2, and I got really, really good at Street Fighter 2 using a character. I used Ryu, as I called him at that time.
Yeah, yeah.
And and I was like a really small kid. I was always like about a year younger than the other kids in my grade, and naturally I was a bit smaller too. I guess I wasn't that tall. So, anyway, I was always there playing that game, and I guess because I got so good at it, it started to draw a lot of attention, and some of the bigger kids, like the junior high kids, and some of the unemployed people of the city, they decided to have like a Street Fighter II tournament, and I remember like one Friday, like everybody gathered there, and there were probably about, you know, maybe 20 or 30 people, and everybody was watching, and I was playing. We were kind of having like a playoff, seeing who could, you know, win the most. Or we were also having like two-player games, like one-on-one, and I remember I won. Like, I was the champion, and I was Ryu, and I don't know. It was really weird. Like, after I won, I beat this guy. I think he was in the sixth grade. And I was probably in the first or second grade at that time. And it was like a really big deal because everybody thought this guy was such a jerk because he always used E Honda and he always did that jab move.
Did you mean the 100 hand slap?
Yeah, yeah. He used to do that and he would just button mash and he would always try and get the person in the corner by doing that move. And he had basically gotten to the finals just by using that move only. And everybody was pissed off. Everybody wanted to kick his ass. And everybody was kind of like rooting for me because I was the only one that had a chance of beating him. And I did. And then after I beat him, everybody was so stoked. And
they lifted you up on their shoulders and they paraded around. And then you all had celebratory ice cream. Is that what happened?
Well, actually, it's even weirder than that, because after I beat the guy, I don't know why, but I instinctually bowed to him. It was so weird. And everybody was like, what the fuck was that? And I just bowed, and, you know, I kept playing. I just didn't want to stop playing the game.
I want to know where your hands were when you were bowing. Were they to your side? Were they out in front with, like, you know, like sort of cupped, you know?
No, my hands were right down to my side. It was like a perfect Japanese bow that people do here.
You were channeling Ryu.
Yeah, it was just so weird because, like, I had never bowed before in my life, and I don't think, after that experience, the next time I bowed was probably, you know, in Japan, like 20 years later. But it was just so weird. I don't know why I did that, but
yeah, in that moment, you were exactly Japanese.
Yeah, I was in the zone. I guess I was using Ryu too much.
It's probably unfortunate, though. It might have ruined your win a little bit, because then probably people started making fun of you.
Yeah, well, one of the many reasons they could have chosen, you know.
That's a good story.
There's one thing that I left out.
Yeah.
There was, see, I was using the Player 2 joystick, and I don't know if you remember how to do the Hadouken or not, but...
Is it down to forward and then one of the buttons?
Away to forward, like roll it away to forward and then one of the punch buttons.
Okay.
But if you're in the player two slot, it's kind of hard to do. Like, I don't know, just that motion with your left hand trying to the away to forward motion. Unless you're in the reverse position. But
are you left-handed or right-handed?
Right-handed, but it doesn't matter because you know, the joystick is in the same place. But anyway, so I couldn't get the Hadouken off in that player two slot very well. So my life was just you know, like a few hits away from being zero. And kind of when he started doing that 100 hand slap move, I switched my hands over. Like, I went cross hand. Like, I put my left hand on the buttons for punch, and then my right hand on the joystick.
Wow.
I reversed it, and then I did the Hadouken, like, three or four times and just took them out. You know, people probably still talk about it now. Like, they're drunk and unemployed, and they're like, oh, do you remember that time Derek beat that stupid guy that used to use the Honda all the time? Oh, yeah, that was awesome.
And did he do a lot of the 100 hand slap, this guy?
That's all he did.
Yeah, yeah.
That's all he did. He was one of those guys.
Yeah, I can just picture that move, too, just continuous. Like, that continuous flurry of slaps.
He was one of those typical, like, you know, those typical bullies. Like, he just by looking at him, you knew he bullied the other kids in his class.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, that's a...
Anyway.
I had a rivalry that was not quite as intense. But during my year 7 and, possibly even getting into year 8, the first couple of years of high school. We don't have any junior high school in Australia. It goes straight from primary school on to high school. But I used to watch Neon Genesis on SBS. There's not many channels on Australian TV. And SBS is a bit weird. I mean, it's not really a common channel for a little kid to be watching. And at the time, there wasn't any ads. During the shows, it was only, you know, before and after shows. But anyway, so I used to sit there and grin and bear the long sort of 8 minutes of ads or whatever it is before the show would start, just because I wanted to catch every last second of this show. And I used to plant myself and just absorb it. Like, I swear I wouldn't blink. And I used to watch it with my brother. And then the next day I'd go to school. And I had another bunch of sort of nerdy friends, and we'd all sit down and we'd just talk and talk and talk, and we'd talk so much that we'd just kill this show with how much we'd talk about it. We would argue about scenes, we'd misremember parts, and then we would, you know, attack each other, and we would talk about I mean, I can't even remember what they're called anymore. Like, what are the... Ava. Which Avas were the best and who was the coolest character? And if you went for Shinji, then you were just lame because he's, like, the main character. You had to go for a character that was more, like, niche and more cool. And if you mention a character who hasn't even been in the show yet because it's, like, you know, you checked it out online or something like that, then you're, like, you're super cool, you know?
This was, like, pre-hipster.
Yeah. Yeah, and so we'd just talk and talk and talk about this show, and I think that went on for probably for maybe 6 or 7 months, and it was a pretty glorious time.
What was it about this show that really stood out for you? Like, what put this show above other shows at the time? Like, why was it special to you?
There's this episode where one of, you know, in case you don't know, inside the you know, the metal casing is an actual kind of beast. And the characters in the show are always sort of fighting this beast. And in one of the episodes, the beast gets sort of like unleashed. And it starts, I think there's one of the angels or something, and I can't quite remember all the details, but it actually starts ripping the angel apart. And it starts, like, eating its flesh. And the main character, or one of the other characters, is, like, inside the machine still, and he's just like, you know, get out, get me out, get me out, get me out, get me out. And he has to sort of just, you know, right up really close, sort of be witness to this horrible act of this creature sort of just shoving this angel in its face, and it's just dripping with blood, and it's just really gross. And I just remember that being unlike anything else that I'd ever seen, a scene like that. It was so brutal, and it had like a lot of fan service, and it had a lot of like, you know, big breasts, and it had a lot of like teenage angst. And you know, I was about 14 at the time, 13, 14, so I was just really getting into that whole kind of angsty thing. And I think it appealed to me as a teenager, robots and breasts. I mean, that was all I wanted.
Yeah. Doesn't get better than that.
No, that's right. Yeah. And so what about you? How did you, I don't think you're going to top Street Fighter 2. But where do you go from there? What was your next stage?
Well, not too long after that Street Fighter II era, I had to move to another area. And in this new area, I didn't really have that many friends, but there was one guy in my class that befriended me, and he asked me to come over to his house, and I used to go over to his house every Saturday, and him and his younger brother, they were playing Final Fantasy II. And this was Final Fantasy IV in Japan, but at the time I didn't know. It was just Final Fantasy II for Super Nintendo. And yeah, one of the first times that I went to that friend's house with his younger brother, it might have been like the second or third time, I can't remember, but it was a regular Saturday morning. We were there playing Final Fantasy II, really into it. I think it might have been just before lunchtime. And just not even halfway into our day of Final Fantasy II. But one of his younger brothers, it was a family of four, three brothers and one sister. But the youngest brother, just a baby, maybe 3 or 4 years old, he just started spazzing like he wanted to use the TV in the basement. And we were using it to play Final Fantasy II. And we just kept telling him, like, Sam, calm down. Like, you can play later. Just calm down. And he just started, like, pushing us. Like, we were all sitting kind of, like, cross-legged on the ground. And he just kept pushing us and pushing us. And we kind of yelled at him. We told him to go away. And he went away, and it was quiet for about 30 seconds, and then suddenly, like, there was a big slam, and we noticed, like, part of the TV got cracked off, like, on the corner, and we looked over towards him, and, like, there was a little Fisher-Price flashlight on the ground that was opened up, and I guess he took the battery from that and just whipped it at the TV, and it hit the corner of the TV and it cracked the plastic, and then he dove at the oldest brother, my friend, and he just sunk his teeth into the top of his head. And my friend started screaming, like, Sam, what's the matter? What are you doing? And then the little brother just kept, like, sinking his teeth into his head, and then, like, he stood up and the brother was, like, holding on to him. And still, teeth sunk into his head, and then, like, he pushed him down, and the older brother started screaming, and then he ran upstairs, and it looked like there was blood in his hand, and then his mom came downstairs and started yelling at all of us and told me to go home. And
which would have been the worst news ever, because, of course, you wanted to play the game, right?
Yeah, we, like, the game wasn't even on pause. Like, the game was just there frozen. Like, you know, the clock was still ticking. I can't remember if we were in battle or not, but yeah. Like, it was kind of traumatic. Like, we were just so into the game, and everything just changed so quickly. You know, good memories, though. Yeah. Next for me was probably in the late 90s. So after FF2, I had moved again a few times due to my parents' work. During that time in the mid-90s or so, I was, I guess, just playing like Mortal Kombat or other games like that. But in the late 90s, I started playing Final Fantasy VII. This, like in the previous story, I had went to my friend's house, and this is a different set of friends. They were playing, my friend and his younger brother, they were playing Final Fantasy VII, and this one, just like the previous, the soundtrack caught me at the beginning, and then I noticed there was a lot of reading, and the story seemed pretty enticing. I just wanted to know what was going to happen next, and I wanted to know the background of the characters. The characterization was really good.
Were you more Tifa, or were you more Aeris?
I was a little more Yuffie, actually. Yeah, I guess if I had to choose between Aeris and Tifa or Tifa, I would probably go with Tifa.
Yeah, I was always more Tifa too. I liked her kind of grounded nature.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm sure that's what they call it now, right?
And I like it that she used to be friends with the other dude. What was his name? Like Barrett?
Yeah, Barrett.
Yeah, yeah. I liked it that they were, you know, she had like that friend, whereas Aeris, she was just a bit too perfect, you know?
Yeah. She seemed a little aloof. Well, I guess so was Cloud, but oh well.
Yeah, yeah. And I was the same. I got really, really into Final Fantasy VII, and I played it a lot. And I actually made a friend who I'm still friends with to this day through Final Fantasy VII. I was playing it independently, and then I'd go to school, and during my graphics class, this friend of mine, he would be talking to another friend, about Final Fantasy VII, and I would sort of listen in, and I'd just eavesdrop on their conversation. And after doing that for maybe, it would have been about 2 weeks, he just turned to me and he just sort of said something like, you know, you can just come over and talk to us if you want. Or something like, oh, so what, you've been playing this game too, have you? Or something along those lines. Like, he basically caught me eavesdropping on him. And after that, I basically just started talking about this game. And I don't think we shut up for probably 3 days. I think we just talked continuously for 3 days on this game, just discussing, because he'd already finished it. And he was just talking about all this. What's the magic called? Materia? Materia. Is that what it's called? Yeah, Materia, I remember he was. Yeah, yeah. He was always talking about this materia that like I just never heard of, and I was really looking forward to it. And he was in the process of trying to breed a perfect chocobo or chocobo or whatever yeah. They're called.
Trying to revive Aeris.
Yeah, and there's, you know, there was like things where you know there's like that place. It's like a casino place, right?
Yeah, the Gold Saucer.
And I think if you win, or if you, you know, I can't quite remember the details, but if you get kind of the equivalent of the best ranking or something like that in one of the games, you get this really special weapon or really special materia or something. And I think he was aiming for that as well.
I think that was a Limit Break. It was Omni Slash.
Oh, right. Yep, it was. I remember now. Limit Breaks. Yep, that's exactly what it was. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You remember that game well.
Yeah, well, see, it's actually kind of funny because what was it? I think I was at a party with some Japanese friends, like maybe a year ago or something, and then people were talking about like, you know, like the favorite time of their life, or you know, the most exciting time, and most of my friends, they were talking about, oh yeah, I remember when I was in high school and I really liked this girl and I was so nervous, I wanted to approach her but I couldn't do it. And basically everybody had some kind of story like that.
Yep.
Or when they're dating their fiancé or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then for me, without a doubt, I was talking about, you know, being in grade 9 and just playing Final Fantasy VII in my friend's basement with his younger brother.
Yeah, I remember really clearly there was I'd just gone into high school, and it's kind of a weird transition going from primary into high school, and because you know that you need to make new friends and it's a new school and everything, and I was still doing my nerdy primary school stuff. I was still talking about games a lot. I was still drawing. I was doing lots of drawing. And I was generally, I really loved primary school and I had lots of friends. And then I went to high school and I didn't have many friends. And I remember this girl who was, you know, who I knew back from primary school. I remember her coming over to me and sort of saying to me something along the lines of, you know, the people that you're hanging out with, you know, they're really lame. And so, like, you're kind of hanging out with all these nerdy guys, and here's your chance. You can basically come with me now, and I'll introduce you to some kind of... Because I know back in primary school, you were kind of cool, but now you're just lame, so... But let me help you, you know. I'll introduce you to some of my friends, and then, you know, I'll bring you over to my side, over to the cool side. And at the time, I was thinking, you know, I hope she doesn't give me, like, girl germs or something. And I don't know what I was thinking, but I remember I made a really either good or bad decision. I essentially just said, nah, I'm not interested. And she walked off, and for the next 4 years, I was just not cool at all for those continuously for the next 4 years or so. And I just continued to hang out with those same guys, and I didn't have any exposure or experience with women at all during, like, most of my high school years. And so definitely my golden time was, yeah, my golden sort of high school experience was just playing lots and lots and lots of games. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I remember, I think the game was, maybe it was Dino Crisis. I think it was Dino Crisis. When I got that game, there was a trailer, there was a demo disc and a trailer to Final Fantasy VIII. And I remember watching that and just, maybe it was because of the realism in the game, but from that moment I just became like really interested in Japan, maybe because Japan had designed this game, or I just started becoming more conscious of Square or Squaresoft as a company. I knew it was a Japanese company, and I knew they were making all these really good Japanese RPGs.
Yeah.
So I just started getting really interested then.
Yeah. I remember distinctly thinking when playing Final Fantasy VII of just how slow it was. I mean, and that
that's true, yeah.
It wasn't necessarily a bad thing. It was just... I guess everything I was playing at the time was mostly platform games or whatever it was, and this was a game which you'd be on the same screen with two people sitting in the sunlight, you know, like in the sunset or something, just talking for just, you know, between saves, like 40 or 50 minutes or something. It just seemed to be an incredibly long time, and it demanded attention.
Yeah, it's pretty different from, like, games like Mortal Kombat and stuff, right?
That's right, and I remember that being... weird, like it's a whole different type of game that I wasn't really familiar with, and I subsequently got really into, you know, American RPGs, and to a lesser extent some Japanese RPGs too, but I think it Final Fantasy VII, and maybe much earlier there was also The Secret of Mana.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Yeah, I remember that, you know, between the two of those games, they really sort of open my mind to this idea of there being kind of like slow games. So anyway, that pretty much summarizes, yeah, between Final Fantasy VII and you know, Neon Genesis and stuff in the early years of high school, getting towards the back end of high school. I was still uncool, but I remember seeing you know, some newspaper articles and stuff for this long awaited new movie that was coming out by Studio Ghibli, which I'd never heard of before. And I'd actually seen other anime leading up to this point. On SBS, the same channel that I used to watch Neon Genesis, they started having, like, Asian Movie Wednesday or something. And they'd occasionally have... animation movies during that time. And is... yeah, so anyway... I was kind of familiar with anime more at this point. And so I saw some of the shots and some of the images and everything from this movie, and I just thought it looked really incredible. And so I went to Melbourne on the train, and it takes just ages to get there. It takes about an hour and 40 minutes to get there by the train, and I had to walk to a really pretty famous cinema that was on Chapel Street, which is, you know, one of the major sort of fashion streets of the, you know, in Melbourne. And I went there, me and a friend, and we went and saw this movie in Japanese, and we saw, you know, with subtitles. And I just remember seeing that film, being really enthralled and engrossed in it, not really knowing what to think, though. After I came out, I just walked out of the cinema, hopped on a tram, and then as I was, you know, going back into the city to go out for lunch or whatever I was going to do, just basically sitting in near silence for maybe 20 minutes or whatever it was, and then just chatting with this friend of mine about my thoughts on this movie, and collectively deciding that it was a really amazing experience, and it was kind of mind-bending. And then it was around about that time that these big CD stores and big DVD stores started to get built all around Australia. Before that, I don't really remember them being as common. But, and sometimes when you'd go into those places, I just remember they were, you know, one of them's called JB Hi-Fi, and it was like my haven. And I'd go in there, and, you know, there were games. That was incredible to begin with. You could buy games in there, lots of games too. But also you could buy movies, and they had a Japanese movie section. And in that area, they were just starting to release more Ghibli films. And they released, for instance, Princess Mononoke, as I called it at the time. They released Princess Mononoke, and they released Totoro, as I called it at the time, and whatnot. And I remember buying those DVDs and sort of just filling my life with Miyazaki films or Studio Ghibli films for a while there. Yeah, that was sort of getting towards the end of high school.
What year do you think that was? Like early 2000 or so?
Yeah, about 2003, 2002, about then.
Yeah.
That was getting towards the beginning of DVDs, and you know, it was around about the time that the Lord of the Rings movies first came out, and around that sort of time.
Mm-hmm.
And so what about you in your later years of high school?
It was mainly just playing a lot of other Japanese video games. Like, I played, of course, Final Fantasy IX, Legend of the Dragoon, Xenosaga. Or I think that was a bit later. But I just continued to play a bunch of Japanese games, especially Square or Squaresoft games at the time.
And then a few years later, as a university student,
in my second year, I started living off campus in kind of like a shared house, a shared apartment with three girls. And they were all international students. One was Syrian, and the other two were, well, one was Chinese and the other was Taiwanese. And they noticed, like, we were playing video games together a few times, and just from them being around me, they said, "Wow, you're really into Japan. Have you ever thought about visiting there or traveling there?" And it kind of just shocked me. Like, I'd never thought about that, ever. But it kind of inspired me to start learning more about the country. I think at that time I was playing, maybe it was like Onimusha or something, just, you know, very traditional. It's a game about like traditional Japan, but I was never really thinking much about it. To me, it was just a video game, and yeah. I thought the story was cool and the characters were cool, the architecture was cool, but there was actually a place. Like, this is, you know, these are all real places, and these characters, like, some of them, they're all real. And I had never thought about that, but just from that simple comment from them, it kind of inspired me to learn more. So I remember going to the library, my university library. This was, you know, the time before everyone had, like, high-speed internet and everything. But I was just basically getting all the books I could on Japan and just reading about it, learning about the culture, the history, and even, like, religion, different things. And I really took an interest to it. And then the next year, or sometime later that year, I decided, well, I should really start learning the language. So I just bought like a Japanese English, English Japanese dictionary at the bookstore. And I started going through that, and I decided to learn the language just through my interest in Japan as a country. And then through that, I just became really interested in the actual language. And then through becoming interested in the language, I became more interested in the country.
Yep.
And just one thing led to another, and then eventually I found myself in Japan.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool. I was much later myself. Yeah, much later.
How did it progress for you?
Well, I started getting into Japanese, and I started getting the sort of desire to go to Japan right at the very, very end of high school, getting into between university and high school. I took 2 years off, and during that time I was working at a giant hardware store called Bunnings. Do you have those in Canada?
No. Well, we have hardware stores, but not that one.
Yeah, well, it's this really giant one, you know. Australians love sort of do-it-yourself sort of stuff, which they invariably always stuff up. But yeah, so I was working at one of those out in the storeroom, out back sort of thing. And anyway, it was a really, you know, no offense to the company at all, you know, the company's fine, but it was a pretty boring job, and it was pretty brainless and, you know, sort of really, yeah, really boring work. And so while I was during that time, I was really, really kind of into just wish fulfillment. You know, I just basically wanted stuff to take me out of the, you know, dreariness of my life. And so I was actually living at home still, and so a lot of my other friends too had gone on to university, so they'd moved off to Melbourne, and I was still back in my hometown. So you can imagine it's kind of lonely. And so I just filled my life with books and everything. That was probably, yeah, the time when I got the most into books and everything. But I also would just watch the movie kind of shamefully. I would just watch Lost in Translation over and over and over and over again. This movie is all about Japan, and it really, you know, projected an image of Japan, which is like really kind of strange and otherworldly. And then it had this great soundtrack, you know, with all this shoegaze music and all that. And then it had basically, yeah, you had these really hot chicks like Scarlett Johansson. I swear, I've still got a crush on Scarlett Johansson because of... Yeah, well, that's right. But because of this movie. I mean, she's gone on to star in, you know, a whole lot of garbage films. But yeah, this film for me, yeah, I mean, that's sort of just... in my mind now, I whenever I think Scarlett Johansson, I always just think Lost in Translation. And it just seemed perfect. I would just watch it with headphones on. I'd watch it in darkness, just sitting in front of the computer screen, and I'd just be totally absorbed into this movie where, you know, all this amazing stuff could happen. You know, I was just sort of living vicariously Bill Murray, through Bill Murray's character. And so I went along to this movie, was in love with it, and then by this point DVDs were, you know, a bit more of a big deal, so I just bought the DVD when it came out and would just watch it over and over and over again. So from that I pretty much got the idea that, hey, I can go to Japan and find my Scarlett Johansson. And so I went to Japan. I didn't find any Scarlett Johansson. I had lots of good experiences in Japan. I met lots of nice people, and I got to experience a lot of really interesting cultural things, you know. But I didn't find my Scarlett Johansson, unfortunately, you know. And then when I came back to Australia, I think that was from that process. That was when I got really, really into Japan. And then I got interested in Japan as like a real place that I could potentially live in. And for when I was in Japan, just to get by, I'd been buying dictionaries and stuff like that, and using those to study words. And so when I came back to Australia, I kept on studying those, and I got into university, and then I got into a course in university. After my first year of uni, I got into, you know, learning into a Japanese course, and then I was good at it, so I kept on doing that. And that's really how it started, just really snowball. It was all really quick after that. I got really into Japanese culture, really into Japanese history, really into Japanese folklore, into fairy tales, and all the other stuff, which I'm pretty much still into. I started really, that all really started, that whole process started around then, around the second year of university.
Yeah, for me too, it kind of happened really quickly. It was just like a snowball effect.
And I guess because it's had that so long. It was so long in the making that, of course, it's like I've just been going up and up and up and up and up that roller coaster, you know, for so long. Of course, you know, it all just, the ride just started and it all just, you know, kind of all exploded into motion really quickly after that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
For me, I think if I could choose one thing in my early experience, I would probably say it's all thanks to Squaresoft. Yep. Just that generation, the golden era of RPGs. I think if I were never exposed to that, I probably would have never taken interest in Japan at a later age.
Yeah, I remember there being games like Chrono Trigger.
Yeah, Chrono Cross.
Chrono Cross, was it?
Well, there's two. One's for PlayStation and one's for Super Nintendo.
Which is the one for Super Nintendo?
For Super Nintendo, that's Trigger.
Okay, well, Chrono Trigger, I remember hearing about that from my brother. That was this apparently awesome, amazing RPG, which, you know, we just couldn't get because it was only in Japanese.
Yeah.
And I remember there being sort of similar myths like that all throughout my life, really.
Mm-hmm.
And almost always they were about some hidden Japanese treasure, which, you know, we just could, I mean, and it still goes on to this day. The idea, for instance, I know that there's certainly a lot of people living in Australia or living in Western countries who can't speak any Japanese who want to play, for instance, the Ni no Kuni games. Yeah. And they can play the one on PS3, but they can't play the one on DS because it hasn't been translated.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so that still goes on, that sort of thing where some games just aren't translated. And it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool coming to Japan and learning Japanese to be able to play that game.
Yeah, I remember when I was young and finding out like Final Fantasy II wasn't actually Final Fantasy II.
Yeah.
It was Final Fantasy IV. Yeah. And I remember just thinking, like, are you serious? There are two other games in between these.
Mm.
And just how it went from Final Fantasy II suddenly to Final Fantasy VII, that really, I don't know, it just surprised me. Like, knowing that there were these other games like Final Fantasy V and Final Fantasy VI, but they were never translated.
If I were to put down my experience down to one sort of major breakthrough, though, I'd probably say it was Spirited Away. It sort of did something to my whole way of thinking about movies and my whole way of, and this idea that, oh, you could probably tell a really, really good story in cartoon, that it doesn't, that it doesn't have to have really, it doesn't have to have real people in it. And in fact, cartoons kind of give you creative freedom in a lot of ways. So, would you like to end it there? Do you have any more Street Fighter stories to tell me?
No, not today. Maybe another time. Okay, folks, there you have it. It's been a long story in the making, and it's still in process now. It's always hard to answer this question, why Japan, or why did you start studying Japanese? You know, it's the exposure happened at a young age, and it's been very, very gradual, and I just happen to like a lot of Japanese things. How about you, Nick?
Yeah, I'm the same, the exact same.
Yeah, it's just been a very gradual process. I don't think that it's strange at all to be here now, considering the interest that I've had growing up as a kid. All right, so let's cut the show here. Thanks for listening, everybody. Guys Learning Japanese. Okay, thanks for listening to the Guys Learning Japanese podcast. Send your questions to glj@gmail.com. We'll answer your questions on the show.